The famous preacher and teacher Chuck Swindoll tells this story in one of his sermons. He says there once was a company president who found it necessary to travel overseas for several years. And so he was forced to leave his business behind and entrust it to the care of his employees. He gathered them around and he says, "I know that you depend on me to manage things day by day, but don't worry, I will send you letters instructing you in what you should do. Every week you'll get a new letter telling you what you should do for that week and answering your questions." So he went abroad and was gone and was out of contact with this business, except for these weekly letters that he sent home every week. After about 2 years, he came back and was eagerly coming back to his business, and he walks up to the front of it, and he looks around, and the grass is overgrown, and there's weeds in the planters. And then he looks up at the front, and a whole bank of windows has been busted out. And he comes to the doors, and the doors are dirty, and he walks in, and there's loud music playing, and the receptionist is asleep at her desk. And there's, over in the back corner, there's Joe and Bob, and they're wrestling. "What is going on with my beautiful business? I left it in your care. I sent the letters to tell you what to do every week. Let me see the books. How are we doing? What are the financials like?" So they bring out the books. They've been losing money ever since he left. "What did you do? Didn't you read my letters?" he calls. "What happened?" And one person says, "Oh, yeah, we got all your letters. We've even bound them in a book, and some of us have memorized them. In fact, we have letter study every Sunday." You know, those were really great letters. In our gospel this morning, Jesus is telling his disciples that he's going to be going away, and they're going to face some hardships and persecutions in this life. He says that they will even hand you over to the governors and to the synagogues, and they will persecute you. You'll be delivered up even by parents and brothers and sisters and friends. And some of you will be put to death. You will be hated by all for my name's sake. And you know, as we read the rest of the gospel, and as we read the next book, Acts, the continuation of the story about the early church, all of these things happen, right? They're dragged in front of the synagogues and in front of the governors. And what happens? They give testimony, and God is with them, and they're able to go through those hardships. Even today, as followers of Christ, we go through hardships and persecutions. This life is not easy. We face trials. Jesus promises that he will be with us. He says, even though you face death and you will die, guess what? Not a hair of your head will be harmed. He's talking about our ultimate salvation. Ultimately, we will be with Jesus forever and ever. Ultimately, no one can touch us. We will die. We will face hardship and persecution, but he will be with us, and he will protect us, and he will bring us to be with him in the end. That's God's promise to his disciples, and that's God's promise to us, his disciples, today. But how do we gain this life and protection from God? Well, we receive it by grace through faith, but we're also called to do something. The very last verse of our passage today, verse 19, he says, "By endurance you will gain your lives." By endurance, by patiently enduring and obeying, that is how we will gain our life with Jesus. It's not just by reading the letters. It's not just by saying we'll do good things. It's our actual actions that make a difference, that shape us into the people we're called to do. How many times have you been out in the world and you've heard Christians called hypocrites or mocked on TV? And often we do this to ourselves, right? We do act like hypocrites, especially people in the public. We've all seen the televangelists talking about Jesus. And what do they do right after that? "Send me all your money." And it's easy to mock. Our actions, though, do show the world what we really believe. They are a test of what we really believe. Do our actions and our obedience and our endurance, do they show that we are followers of Christ? Because our actions are what reveal who we are inside. They reveal who we are not only to those on the outside, but also to ourselves. Did you know that we as human beings, we like to lie to ourselves, I believe. I'm pretty good at it. I'm pretty good at saying, you know what? My sins are not that bad. We minimize them, probably for good reasons, probably to protect ourselves psychologically, right? But we see ourselves as not as bad as our neighbor. We see ourselves in the best possible light. Somehow we're able to think the best about ourselves. You know what? I just told that little white lie, but I'm not a liar. I'm not a liar. Yeah, I know that gossip was fun, but I'm not a gossip. And so we rationalize. But you know what? Our behavior and our obedience, when we're come face to face with it, it's really hard to hide from our actions, is it not? And so our actions reflect back to us who we are. And when we stop and look at our lives, what do we do on a daily basis? It reveals to us who we are. Our actions reveal to the world and to ourselves who we really, really are inside. But you know what? When we do something over and over again, like obey God, we become someone who's obedient. We become shaped in what we do in our daily, everyday actions. This is how habits are made. If you do something every day for 40 years, what happens the next day? You do it. My father-in-law was a school teacher for almost 40 years, and he got up at 5 or 5:30, some ungodly hour, and he made a pot of coffee, and he got ready for school every day. And he did that for 37 years. And I'm not a morning person, so I was convinced that when he retired, he would surely sleep in at least till 7. But what did he do the next day after? He got up at 5:30 and made his coffee and prepared for his day. And he goes to bed at 9 o'clock to this day and gets up at 5:30. It's a habit. It's a part of who he is. He did it for so long, he can't change it. When we do something over and over and over again, it becomes a part of who we are and shapes us. Behavioral scientists tell us that we are our actions. Now, as Christians, we know that we are so much more than just our actions. But we have to agree that our behaviors affect our attitudes and our outlooks and our personalities and who we are. Consistent obedience leads to a life that is transformed over a period of years because we are shaped by our little choices. Our life is a series of choices. Each one is seemingly small and insignificant, but they shape us. We often dream of doing big things with our lives, of being important, of standing up and saving the day, of being the hero, of speaking out for justice, of giving our lives on the mission field. We think about making big acts, heroic acts. But truly, our character is formed in the small and the daily choices that we make to follow Christ every day. This is what forms our character. Will we participate in that conversation where we're gossiping about our coworker? Will we tell that little tiny lie? Will we have just one more beer with our friends tonight? Will we look the other way while our friends are mocking or teasing that person? Will we let our hearts daydream greedily about our neighbor's possessions? Every day we have small opportunities to obey God. What we do in those moments shapes who we are and what we become. Most of you remember Captain Sully Sullenberger. He was the pilot of that flight in 2009, where they hit some birds and the engines failed, and Captain Sully landed the plane in the Hudson River. And I believe that the only casualties that day were the birds. All the humans were safe. He landed in the water and safely, emergency landing, and they were able to evacuate that plane, and everyone was saved. Now, if I had been the pilot to that day, what would have happened? We all would have died. Everybody on the plane would have exploded as we hit the water. Captain Sully saved the day because he was calmly able to do what he had trained to do. Even a first or second year pilot wouldn't have been able to do that, even though they knew how to fly the plane. He was able to do that because he had years and years of repetitive training. He had spent years in a cockpit. He spent years and hours in a simulator over and over again for every situation he was trained. And so when all is going wrong and chaos ensues in the plane and he's got to make split-second decisions, what kicks in? His training. His hands do what they're supposed to do. His brain does what it's supposed to do. He calms his body and does what his training tells him. His little decisions to practice every day take over when it's time. The little things over and over, that is what prepares us for the big things and reveals who we truly are inside. When we choose to do the small things, the little things, we're training, we're practicing, we're pointing ourselves in a direction so that our character is shaped into a person capable of the big things. One of my favorite Christian teachers has called the Christian life a long obedience in the same direction. A long obedience in the same direction. We grow in the Christian life as we make decisions repeatedly to follow Jesus in the little things over a long period of time. It's a long obedience in the same directions. It's plodding, it's slow, and it's boring oftentimes. This is the way anything good in life happens. It's not dramatic, it's not flashy or showy. It doesn't allow us to show off or put ourselves on the center stage so that our ego can be exalted. It's behind the scenes, consistent steadiness. It's the tortoise and the hare. It's the long distance runner. On our deathbeds, we want to be able to say that we are strong and courageous and full of love and kindness and joy. We want to be that kind of person. How do we get there? It's a long, consistent obedience over a lifetime. This is so difficult for Americans, is it not? We love the faddish, the quick, the flashy. Maybe this is the problem with some of our churches. This is our weakness with our witness in America. Too often, we do church in a way that is the same as we diet in America. We go for the quick fix, the fad diet. We do it for a while, and then we move on and give up. We do the big push. We like the excitement, the fad. Christ says, you will gain your lives through patient endurance. Every day, doing the right thing over and over again. The Christian life is a long obedience in the same direction. And through our endurance, we gain our lives, because it is through patient endurance and obedience that we trade our lives for the life of Christ. Or should I say, we lose our lives, because our lives belong to whomever is our master. As John the Baptist said, I must decrease, he must increase. This is why obedience is so important. It places Christ at the center of our lives. It allows us to be the disciples. It allows Christ to change our hearts. This is why great Christians throughout the history of Christianity have agreed that obedience is key for the Christian life. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, that wonderful German theologian who gave his life in resistance to Hitler, said, only he who is obedient can believe. Only he who is obedient can believe. C.S. Lewis said, I cannot learn to love God except by learning to obey him. And Calvin said, obedience is the mother of true knowledge of God. I recently read an article about a man named John Wee. He founded a company called eMachines. They made computers. He grew the company to 140 employees. They had a factory where they produced these machines, these computers. And he sold it and retired, and he sold it to a company called Gateway Computers. He sold it for $290 million, plus some stock options in Gateway. And all of his employees were guaranteed jobs with the new computer system with Gateway. They took over the factory. So he owed his employees nothing. He'd paid them well over the years. They had jobs. They were continuing on in the same place. He owed them nothing. He could just take his money and ride away into retirement. But one day, the last day he was with the company, he came out onto the floor of the factory, and he walked around with a stack of envelopes, and he went and shook everybody's hand, all 140 employees, from the person who'd been there 30 years to the person who started 2 weeks ago. He shook their hand, and he said, thank you for making this company a success, and he handed them an envelope. And in that envelope was a check, and every person got at least 30% of their annual salary. But the people who'd been with him the longest, his executives, got even more. Many people got over $100,000 checks that day. And his 12 top executives each split $12 million of stock options. He gave away over $72 million on his way out. He didn't have to do that. He could have said thank you with his mouth. But with his actions, he told them thank you by giving them something. They will know we are Christians by our love, by our actions, by what we do, not with our words. We can sit in a sanctuary every Sunday and glorify God with our words, and we should. We can sit in a sanctuary every Sunday and read his letters, and we should. But it is through our patient obedience, our endurance, the endurance of the trials of this life that we all will go through. It is through that endurance that we prove ourselves to be true followers of Christ. It is through endurance that we gain our lives.